another episode of Constructed Criticism. My name is Michael Hinderacher, and I am joined by my host. I mean, by the actual host. I'm merely a co-host, Spencer Howland.
That's not... I'm not going to lie, it does actually sound weird to not hear. Hello, everyone. It actually is...
Yeah, I mean, I contemplated trying to copy it and just see how long we could keep it up.
I could tell, too. I was like, is he going to do it? And the thing is, it was a joke for a while. Like fans would come up to me at, like, events, and they'd be like, hello, everyone. And, like, I just kind of wrote it. So I do it in my videos now, too. But do you want me to go now?
Sure.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 205 of Constructed Criticism. I am your host, Spencer Howland, and I am joined by Silver Pro and the best co-host on any Constructed podcast out there, Michael Hinderacher.
That's so kind. I'm trying to think of who else that could be, but I can't think of any, so
why don't you just take my compliment at face value?
Oh, it seems good. It seems good to me. It seems likely too good to me. That's why I was trying to think about it.
You know who else is great as our sponsors? You can check them out at mtgoasis.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. And you can get 4% off of every order by using the code WouldThatBeGood at checkout. You can check out our other sponsor that we forgot to mention last week at the Mana Base. I don't know how we forgot to mention them till the end of the episode. They are pretty amazing. You can check them out. Their sponsor, Fusion Gaming, sponsored Canadian Nationals this year. So check out Fusion Gaming. Let them know that Constructed Criticism sent you. Check out their other sponsors. Apparently, we have a tie between Nikachu and Mason right now. So currently, between those content creators, we're head-to-head, one for one. We got to break the tie somehow. Hopefully, Mason.
I feel like one and one is just an irrelevant sample size. Like, you got to play more than twice before you can be like,
This isn't how news stories work, Michael. It's a one-sided grudge match. There's no way Nikachu even knows that we talk about this every week.
Yeah, but how can you be a nemesis when you've only played twice?
He actually might know that we talk about it every week.
I mean...
You can also support this network by checking out our other podcast at Limited Time Only, a weekly podcast about getting better at Magic the Gathering with a focus on limited play. You can also check out the owner... the owning company of this podcast, Easy Game Media. Check them out anywhere, everywhere. Not really. You can check them out on YouTube and Patreon. That's about it right now. But yeah, check that out. And I believe that Kyle is still looking for a new co-host for Common Knowledge, a popper podcast about getting better Match of the Gathering. So reach out to Kyle if you're interested in trying to get that job. And then you can support this podcast directly by going to Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/ccmtg, become a patron of the show. Jeremiah R. is our newest patron, and it really does mean the world to me. And when I say that, I'm not really lying. So I was in bed the other night, and I got that notification. I opened up my phone, checked my notifications, and saw that Jeremiah had become a patron. And I was like, and I like threw my arm in the air, and I was like, yes! And I'm laying next to my wife, and she's like, what? I was like, we got a new patron.
Chill, Spencer, chill.
I love it when we get new patrons. Like, it means the world to me every single time because it means somebody out there found what we were doing to be worth something to them. And it means so much to me. So special shout out to Jeremiah. My wife thinks I'm crazy. Michael thinks I'm crazy. But it actually really does mean a lot to me. So
I think it's cool, too. I like when people like things that, you know,
that you're doing.
We spend a lot of time working on. So
sure. Yeah. Well, you can if you are a patron of the show, you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg. There's a thread for October for Patreon questions. You can leave a question there. We don't have any questions this week, but what we do have is #AlwaysApproving, our first segment of the podcast after Patreon questions. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse, and we want to be doing what we can every week to be improving ourselves because Magic's really tough. You know, we got a lot of credit for last week's #AlwaysImproving. Something that I always feel like is maybe we're not giving this segment enough of its due respect because it's so much of what this podcast encompasses. But every week somebody tells me that what we've said during this segment helps them. So it means a lot to me and I really appreciate it. Michael, what did you do this week to try and improve at Magic the Gathering?
So I didn't have a chance to play as much as I wanted to. So I just the last couple of days, I kind of scoured the Nationals lists, the various ones that came up. Like I think Canadian ones were posted earlier today, and the U.S. top 16 was posted yesterday. And like, I know those are mixed format events, so maybe it's a little bit less less purely relevant as far as standard goes than some events, but you know, still some really good players there. So just something to keep an eye on. And then I was taking a look at some of the lists from the Moto PTQ over the weekend, just trying to get a feel like where things are, what the decks are you're trying to beat, where innovations in lists are going, just like trying to stay current so that the things that I'm trying, I'm not wasting my time doing so.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think that this is like a really weird Pro Tour for you. It's like
you're like actually trying to metagame, which is something I'm way more comfortable with. Like, I think I'm better at that than I am at just like building decks. But
it's kind of crazy. I don't know who it favors, because if you actually broke it, right, then you just keep that secret. But what happens if like six people think they broke it and just come with completely crazy decks? Are you better off coming with like a mid-range deck that can, or like a rampy deck that can like just beat nonsense? Or are you better off coming with an aggro deck that can try and get under it? Like, how do you metagame for a format where the best players in the world are extremely incentivized to keep it secret?
I think just a general rule, if you're not sure, lean to make games faster.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think that trying to play really drawn out games against players who are A, better than you, and B, maybe have information you don't, is likely a losing strategy.
Yeah.
That's just my impression.
Yeah, that's completely understandable. So for me this week for hashtag always improving, it was kind of a continuation of something that happened last week. So last week I tweeted out while I was watching Reed Duke that I really want to emulate the things that he does. And more than that this week, I found it really important that not only that, but I want, and I'm trying to, learn from everyone. I think that too often we discount other people's opinions because we think they're worse than us or not as smart as us or don't come from the right place. And I think that a better thing to do is try and internalize everything and then emulate the things that speak to you. You know, one of the things that I really like about Reed Duke is his mechanics. And over the last 2 weeks, I've really tried to slow down my game and think about plays before I make them, even if it's just for a split second, rather than thinking automatically that's the right play and doing it, maybe just for a split second, questioning myself, confirming, and then going. It actually doesn't take as long as you would think. And it's something that I constantly see Reed doing that I'm trying to emulate. And I really think that it helped me win my PPTQ this weekend. I think that it is so easy to get caught up in thinking you are right rather than thinking why you are right or how you are right or how you could be wrong or how you could be right. And I want to find things from other people that I appreciate, learn from it, and then apply it to myself. And I think I did a good job of that this week.
It's a good feeling. I think just like, I like the point of rather than just like emulating entire people's personalities or games, I think that's really challenging to do. Like, and it's hard when there are people that maybe you don't like that aren't as likable, or there are things you don't like, or there are things in their approach or in their deck building choice or in their play that you find either hard to emulate or just don't want to emulate. But like trying to think of things as almost pieces and trying to, you know, sort of Voltron yourself, right?
Absolutely.
Like, you're just like, I'm just going to, like, make myself a little better at this, and I think this person is really good at this, so I'm going to look at how they try to do this.
I want to take the best parts of Owen, the best parts of PV, the best parts of Reed, the best parts of Huey, smash them all together, maybe take a little bit of Finkel, sprinkle in a little LSV, and get myself, you know, that person.
Sure, and I mean, obviously that's, like, kind of a unreasonably high standard, but
exactly.
I think that maybe if you start with the idea that you want to be as good as Huey or as good as Owen or as good as Reed, those are sort of unattainable goals. But if you start with the idea that, like, I really like the way that Reed is doing this, you can sort of, like we were talking about last week, just breaking your goals down into more manageable pieces is really important.
Well, I think too, like, the thing that I really learned is, like, taking something from, you know, Sammy or Aaron or Travis or Drew or Michael or Alex or Danny and like, what do they do better than me? How do they do it better than me? Is this something that I can gauge from watching them? Is this something that I can learn from talking to them? These aren't PV and stuff, right? Like, but is there something that they're doing better than me that I can learn from and apply there to get me closer to that end goal of being closer to Reed or Huey or Owen or PV, right?
Yeah, just small improvements over time, right? You just, if you were 0.5 today, you're trying to be 0.5001 tomorrow, right? It doesn't have to be huge. It just has to be any tiny little thing.
Let's move on from this segment and let's talk about our next segment, which is our Deck Doctor. If you are a patron of $5 or more per month, you get access to our Constructed Critics Facebook group, as well as submitting a Deck Doctor for us to talk about on the show, where we talk about the things that we like, the things that we would change, and where we think the deck stands today. And today we have a Deck Doctor from one of our listeners that is a little spicy. Michael, why don't you go ahead and read this off for us?
Okay, so it's 2 Walking Ballista, 4 Grim Flayer, 1 Jace Friend's Prodigy, 3 Snapcaster Mage, 4 Tarmogoyf, a Kalidus Trader of Geth, 4 Fatal Push, 3 Inquisition, 4 Opt, 2 Thoughtseize, 2 Abrupt Decay, a Counter Squall, a Victim of Night, 2 Liliana of the Veil, 1 Liliana of the Last Hope, 1 Maelstrom Pulse, a Murderous Cut, 23 lands that have a Lumbering Falls and a Creeping Tar Pit. Nothing else especially interesting. Sideboard, a Scavenging Ooze.
A split between Bloomy Marsh and Dark Six Shores is interesting to me.
Sure, but I mean a fairly typical.
Yeah, fairly, I mean, it makes the right correct numbers of
mana base. Yep. Sideboard, 1 Scavenging Ooze, 2 Fulminator Mage, 2 Ceremonious Ejection, a Dispel, Nihil Spellbomb, Tragic Slip, Disdainful Stroke, Go for the Throat, Ashiok, Pulse of Marasa, Sultai Charm, Damnation, and Fracturing Gust.
Cool. So I want to start with something that I feel like we haven't talked about on this podcast a lot. And this deck is doing something that I used to do a whole lot and still actually sometimes do. In fact, the deck that qualified me for my first Pro Tour did this, and that's an extreme diversification of removal spells. There's a Tragic Slip and a Go for the Throat in the board, a Victim of the Night, 4 Fatal Pushes, and a Murderous Cut in the main, as well as a Maelstrom Pulse and a Split on Liliana's. It's a very large spread of removal, as well as 2 Abrupt Decays, actually.
Yeah, so you have a lot of diversification of removal, and like then you're running an Inquisition Thoughtseize split as well, which is a little more standard. It's interesting. So just like first thoughts looking at this deck is that you're basically playing like a black-green shell, right? And then we've added essentially Snapcaster and Walking Ballista that are like very outside the norm of kind of what you'd expect to see.
Yeah, one of the first things that I think looking at this list is how much I really wish, because of Tarmogoyf and Grimflare, that how much I wish that I was able to get something like Stubborn Denial in here.
Yeah, that would certainly be a direction you could take it. I almost end up thinking like this deck might want like Traverse the Ulvenwald or something like that.
Oh, that could help too. I don't know that would take me away from wanting a couple of Stubborn Denials though.
You could. I mean, I'm just like, so looking at this deck, I think if you were to include a couple of artifacts in the main deck outside of, like, it's like you could basically, the opts could become traverses and maybe you could trim a land or two. And then one of the Walking Ballistas can become like another, like a Mishra's Bauble or a Nihil Spellbomb type effect. And I think that should give you enough types for that to like kind of work.
I actually wonder if you could do maybe like an EE or two in the main here because of the 3 colors.
Absolutely. I mean, that could easily replace like one of these removal spells too. But I end up feeling like, so I like opt in theory in kind of flash decks, but I'm not convinced this deck can actually play it instant speed effectively enough for opt to really make sense over either Sleight of Hand, Traverse, or Serum Visions. Because we have so much stuff we have to do on our turn, right? Like, we have multiple Lilianas, we have 15 creatures, and we have like five discard spells too. Plus, I think you're often going to need to animate like the Tar Pit or the Lumbering Falls. So you end up in this spot where I'm not really sure why we're playing Opt, in that I feel like it's maybe a little more of a proactive deck.
Yeah, you're taking this a little bit of a different direction than I was. I was trying to figure out, I think that to me, it's clear that this player wants to be playing Opt. So how do we maximize these colors to do that? And that's why I want to go the Stubborn Denial route, right? I want a couple of Stubborn Denials. Maybe even I want to cheapen my overall creatures. Maybe instead of playing a Jace of Ruins Prodigy and a Kalidus, maybe I play a couple of Tassagers. And maybe my goal is I up the number of overall instants in my deck. So maybe I include like things like Thought Scour to so I can, like Michael said, decrease my land count and maximize my Snapcaster Mages and my Liliana.
That might make sense. If you want to go that direction, I think I don't really love Walking Ballista in this shell.
Yeah, I also think that you could, if you're looking for artifacts, you could do things like maybe EE or maybe Mishra's Bauble, other things other than Walking Ballista. It is nice that it gets you a creature and an artifact, but I don't know that it,
but it,
this
it's
is
not
the
a very
deck
good
that can
spell.
Maximize it.
It's not a very good spell. We don't really have any ways to make extra land drops. Liliana the Veil, like, kind of cuts into that a little bit as well. It's hard to make, like, your fifth and sixth land drops. So, like, I like Walking Ballista a little bit better if you have Traverse going on for multiple reasons, right? Because it, like, the two type is more valuable the more Delirium stuff we have. But also, obviously, like, it's a pretty reasonable one of target at some point in the game too, potentially.
So would you be in for a like all in Delirium style? I mean, we've done this, you and I have done this in the form of like Bug Death Shadow, but maybe moving into like a more mid-rangey version, but still playing like a Traverse, maybe Opt and Thought Scour deck with Snapcaster Mage. Playing like very little lands.
I might start by looking at like there were like some Abzan Traverse lists that were pretty popular not that long ago, or maybe it was just green black Traverse, but they were like playing like Shriek Maw and Traverse and Mishra's Bauble, and then like basically just like a rock shell. I might start by looking at something like that and then look at adapting it from there.
Yeah,
but I think that something along those lines could make sense.
Yeah,
I haven't personally played a lot with anything like that, but I mean, your card quality in a deck like this is just pretty good, right? I mean, you just play a lot of good cards.
I think that like maybe cutting a Counter Squall and something else for a couple of cheaper interactions to go with your Snapcaster Mage. One of the things that I really like about what he's doing though is there's some sweetness in his deck. I think that Ceremonious Rejection is a really high equity right now, so having that in your Snapcaster Mage deck is really good. And I think that Soultide Charm is criminally underplayed in most formats. And in a deck like this, if you go that route that we're talking about where you're more instant speed, having some of those in your sideboard actually isn't bad.
Yeah, I like some of the, like, now that we have Fatal Push, and maybe you aren't, like, if you decide that basically you don't want Path to Exile, or, like, you don't really want Lingering Souls. I mean, you could even play, like, four colors and play Lingering Souls in your Thought Scour deck. Just, you know, Thought Scour Liliana, Lingering Souls, kind of sweet. But I would take a look at some of those, like, Abzan Traverse lists and maybe start from a list like that, just because I know that those were not Death Shadow based decks, so they're going to look more like traditional Abzan or Jund style decks. But I think that would be a really good starting place.
Cool. Where do you think a deck like that, either direction, right? If he takes it either direction, splitting the difference, where do you think either style of those decks kind of lands in this format right now?
I think that they're like pretty good. I think that these kind of decks are like generally favored against Death Shadow, which maybe has fallen out of prominence a little bit. But I would also expect that in general, most of these rock style decks, especially as you look towards maybe making it a little bit leaner in some ways, they do just fine against Affinity, which has been real good lately. You'd have a lot of interaction for like Storm, and I think you might still have enough kind of big dumb guys to rumble with Eldrazi Tron, so I don't think it's a bad choice.
Okay. I, I actually think that as the and what I'd love to talk. This kind of brings me to like the what we'd play because we're talking about Modern this week. But I actually really think that the format is moving to the point where Jund is going to be good again. And I have always found Bug to be very favored against the Jund style decks, while also keeping most of its good matchups. Like you can build your sideboard accordingly to try and fix the things that might be the problem with Bug. I know that for the one of the it might have been one of the Modern Pro Tour where Deathrite Shaman got banned. We actually as a team had a Bug deck with Jace and Deathrite Shaman to beat the Jund decks. So like when I say that I legitimately believe that this strategy is good against Jund. Like we had teammates that were going to play it at the Pro Tour, and I think that is a pretty big deal. So, let's go on to our power rankings though. Let's talk about the power rankings. So I asked some of our constructed critics. So the people, so for dude 4552, the Jace would have been the 4-mana Jace, Jace Architect of Thought back then. But let's go to our power rankings. So Modern, SCG, Open. And the MTGO challenge. So I asked our constructed critics if they wanted us to include the challenge results when we did Eternal ranking, so Legacy and Modern. And it was unified yes. Like they all wanted us to do that. And we are very happy to do it. And it actually made these power rankings super interesting in my opinion.
It'll be good for Legacy especially where like we need more data points. And those are good absolutely. Data points because people like there's enough cash at stake that people are really trying to win.
Oh yeah, they're like 2Ks. It's like
Yeah. Totally reasonable value wise.
Yep. So let's come in with in fifth place, coming with 9 points. So I wanna talk about kind of these results really quick. So there are some splits in decks in a pretty big way. And one of the biggest decks that had huge splits in it was actually Jeskai. So their Jeskai Tempo and Jeskai Control have like a huge rift in them as far as like what the deck is trying to do. So if you were to just glance at all of the results, Jeskai would come in with quite a few points, but neither one of the decks actually adds up to enough to make it onto this list.
So you split them into two. So basically it got spaced out. Yeah.
And it's funny because if I add Jund, Mardu, and Abzan together, they come in like second place. So what I tried to do this week is be very clear about what decks are what. If they have a very similar game plan, they're together outside of Jund. And the reason for that is because I think that Jund has shown itself to be that much better than Abzan and Mardu. So the deck that we have in front of us is, I believe it took second at the, on the online tournament. And I think that this deck is very clearly head and shoulders above Abzan and Mardu. I can't say the name of this deck.
It's Jund by Tesla Zach.
But what I want to talk about really quick is like, is this correct that this has 6 Lilianas in it?
So, this is, like, one of the first events where the new Planeswalker rule is in effect, and I'm almost certain that it is. So, Liliana of the Veil takes care of extra copies of herself on her own, right? Like, if you have extras, it's just not a problem. Extra ones are either a removal spell or a card you can discard to the first one. So, that's fine.
So, here's the thing, is when we were brewing that Bug deck, we very much wanted both of these, but you can't fit both of them into that Bug deck, right?
Well, you couldn't when you couldn't have them both in play at the same
right,
time.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is that now there's this new tug and pull for two cards that honestly kind of play well together.
Yeah, so I think that one of the cool things about being able to play Liliana Last Hope in addition to Liliana the Veil, and maybe one of the reasons that Jund was able to, at least for the week, supplant Abzan when I think the general trend had been in the opposite direction, is the ability of Liliana Last Hope to sort of grind and ping down X1s. It does a lot of the same things Lingering Souls does, strangely, but it's maybe a little more flexible. And I think that that's pretty powerful. Like, traditionally, I think that's one of the spots that Abzan has had a big advantage. Like, Lingering Souls has been kind of insane against Affinity. But Liliana Last Hope is very good in that matchup as well.
Completely. I mean, if you look back through Jund's history, it has just splashed white for Lingering Souls, right? And, and a Johnny Vengeance. But I think that one thing that Jund has going for it is it has the best. Like, it's got Ancient Grudge out of the board. It's got, you know, if you want to go bigger, you can play Dragons. It's got Kolaghan's Command. It can easily play white for, like, I mean, even if you wanted to play white, I played white for Sorin. I've played white for a Johnny. I've played white for Lingering Souls. It's so easy to get into that space, all while keeping the identity of what you're actually trying to do. And for a long time, it was because of Lightning Bolt. But I think what we found is that things like Terminate become more relevant. Things like Chandra and Kolaghan's Command. It just has exactly what the deck is trying to do in a tight-knit thing. Now, if the format swung in a way where things like were good, that could be a thing that could change. But I don't think that's where we're at right now. And I think that it's too easy for Jund to swing in the direction to pick up its own slack. And that's why, for as long as Modern has existed, outside of 1 or 2 weeks, maybe a little bit more, Jund has constantly pushed the pace of these style of decks.
Yeah, I really think that just like getting to play Dark Confidant is really good right now. And looking at this list, you could actually get to a very similar space mana curve-wise in Abzan. That makes me think that maybe Abzan should be trying Dark Confidant again. But I love how lean this deck is. Like, when you're looking at what's good in the control matchups, like with Jeskai coming more into favor, this deck just has so many high-impact cards, and like going to 6 Lilianas plus K-Command plus Dark Confidant, you just have so much ability to like play a flexible game. You have like Raging Ravine, which is so much better. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the low-key reasons that this deck probably lines up better...
We didn't even talk about Raging Ravine.
Raging Ravine is way better than Shambling Bend or Hissing Quagmire or whatever you want to play in Abzan.
So, there was a time where the split was like 3 Temple Guard and 2 Raging Ravines, but as you get closer and closer to playing mid-range mirrors, Raging Ravine gains more and more and more and more and more equity because it closes out games so much faster.
It attacks into clogged boards, right? Like, because of both Trample, like, it makes Lingering Souls look pathetic. It gets in there. I also think that 4 mana Chandra is really powerful in this deck. I don't know. Your card quality is just insane. Like, you look at this deck and it's just like all the cards you want to play.
So just to be clear, Raging Ravine isn't the one with Trample. It's actually the other one that had Trample.
Which one? Oh, does it just get +1/+1 but not Trample?
Yeah, so the
which one does get Trample?
Yeah, so the green one, I just said it like 2 seconds ago.
Oh, Treetop Village?
Treetop Village has Trample.
Oh, okay. I still think that I still think that in general, Lingering Souls is obviously, it's also less of a problem if you're playing a bunch of Lilianas.
Yeah.
Or Raging Ravine, rather, being able to rumble with like Tarmogoyfs potentially.
Yes.
Like a Grim Flayer. Yeah. It can trade with a Grim Flayer that has Delirium already. I mean,
so what? Here's the common situation that happens in the mirror match is that it quickly turns off your opponent's top decks, whether it's Lightning Bolt. Now that they have Fatal Push, it isn't as true. But early on, it was like, okay, well, like, if we're getting in a top deck war, I want my land to quickly survive Lightning Bolt, and I want it to kill them faster and faster and faster.
Well, and these decks are still playing a non-zero number of Lightning Bolts. And in the exact mirror, I mean, I think just like the fact that it can get into trading or even racing a Grim Flayer before too long. I mean, it can often trade with a Tarmogoyf. Like, that's just not that common in a man land, and Hissing Quagmire can do a little of that, but, like, you're only attacking for 2 if they're not blocking. So, I think that the man land is just, like, far superior in this deck.
I think Hissing Quagmire and
Both that and Vent are clearly like a tier below. Vent.
Right? Yeah, they're just so much worse overall. It's not even close. Like, and also the double activation on Raging Ravine has happened so many times on camera. Like, the amount it's happened on camera tells you how much it happens IRL, right? Like,
it's not a thing that you think about until it's happening and you win the game because of it, right?
And then they're like, why can you do that? Why is that a thing that happens to me right now? So let's go on to our next deck, which is Titan Shift. But I didn't want to call this Titan Shift. I didn't even know that I wanted to call it Shift. I wanted to call it it's Green Red Titan is what's really happening these days. So there is now a divide on Volokud decks. And it is, they're all Volokud decks. They're all Primeval Titan decks. But we've got Naya decks. We've got, Through the Breach decks. We've got Scapeshift decks. But what's really happening here is people are trying to figure out the speed in which this deck needs to play at to combat the format. Because the format is now attacking it. Titan Shift was the best deck for a couple of months, and now people are like, okay, but like, how do I beat you? Right? And there's a few things that have happened. One of them is they've started playing Prismatic Omens, so they're cutting down their Scape Shifts because they don't need it because they have Hour Promise and Primeval Titan. One of them is they're now playing Emrakul again and Through the Breach. Some of them are playing Naya so that they can play Through the Breach and Nahiri. Like, where is this deck going, and why are all of them Velika decks, and what is correct?
Oh, man. It's sort to say. I feel like so much of this is just preference. Like, the deck is clearly good in various versions, and a lot of it is just trying to figure out, like, what you think you're going to play against, what the flavors of the week, like, basically which flavor of the week is the correct one, right?
Yeah. Actually, we have an interesting comment in chat, and I'd love to talk about it for a second because I never get to talk about this on the podcast. And that's how good Blood Moon is. Michael, I think Blood Moon is like legitimately terrible against Titan Shift.
It's not great. Like, it's only good.
So talk about it. Why do people board in Blood Moon expecting it to be the end of the game and then lose when they keep those hands?
Well, so the thing is, if you have, like, Blood Moon into threats, it's probably good because it makes Titan Shift a literal I cast Primeval Titan deck, which is obviously, like, not great. But it only really gets you badly if it catches you off guard. Because if you've just, like, fetched forests knowing that it's a thing that can happen, then, I mean, it's annoying in the sense that, like, your Scape Shifts don't read you win the game anymore or whatever, and you probably still aren't boarding them all out, but you know, like, if your opponent just plays a Blood Moon and expects that to be good, and you just go Primeval Titan, Primeval Titan, or Primeval Titan Thragtusk, or Primeval Titan Obstinate, you know what I mean? Like, if you just, like, play two big things
exactly.
And attack.
So often the deck you're boarding in things like Obstinate Baloth, so often you're expecting them to bring in Blood Moon, so maybe bring in a Nature's Claim. When they board in their affinity decks, you're probably boarding in Fracturing Gust, which really blows them out. And
not that it's not good still. I mean, it's still fine, right?
It's probably better than something else you had in your deck. But too often I find that people keep hands that are like, well, this is like nonsense and Blood Moon, so I'm going to win. And then I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to cast, you know, a turn two Sakura Tribelder, go get my second forest. And then I'm going to cast Obstinate Baloth into Hour of Promise into Titan, and then you die.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those spots where Primeval Titan having Trample is really powerful. And the other thing is that a lot of the Blood Moon decks, like, are functional under Blood Moon, but it dings them a little bit here and there, too. So, like, just playing ramped out 6/6s, if both of you are sort of playing a semi-neutered game plan, is still fine. The place that it's got me, people for a minute kept playing this Jund deck with Blood Moon in the main deck in the last couple of months. And obviously in game one, like, there's a much higher cost of fetching out a bunch of forests if you're thinking you're going to kill with Primeval Titan Valakut. So, I mean, I certainly think Blood Moon is a good card against this deck. I just don't think that, you know, it's Mold of Four, land, Blood Moon can't lose.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and the thing is that as you attack with Primeval Titans, more so than just the trample, you're taking lands out of your deck, so your draw steps get increasingly better. You're more likely to draw outs to the Blood Moon. You're also more likely to draw more Primeval Titans, more threats, maybe things like Tireless Tracker or other things like that. Also, or and it's ramping you so that, like, the downside of Summoner's Pact is negated.
It can be a little bit. I've still had trouble with, like, most of these lists only have three forests. So if you can't get out from under the Blood Moon relatively quickly, it can still be annoying if they're, sure, you know, good at killing your... It really depends on the shell that it's in. And I mean,
yeah,
I certainly think Blood Moon is boomeranged
once. Or not, sure, boomerang. Maybe it was Beast Within on my upkeep. Something like, yeah, that. And I was like, oh, well, that's GG.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think Blood Moon is good against this deck. It's just not... You're not guaranteed to win a game when they keep those kind of hands.
I do want to say that I don't know, as like the Bullocket aficionado, I don't know what's correct right now. People are attacking this deck really, really hard. Like, this is the deck that people are trying to beat, and it's really resilient, right? Like, the fact that it's able to cut down on the number of scapeshifts that it's playing tells you how good this deck has become. But one of the problems is that it's not impossible to beat. It's not ban worthy to the point where
it's not even, yeah, close,
it's,
I don't think.
It's like, so when decks like Storm come in and Ad Nauseam come in and people really try to beat this, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to kind of go through all of the things that people are doing to beat specifically this deck. And I think that it shows why a couple of our other decks showed up. Let's actually start with the next deck, which tied with this deck, coming with 11 points, which is Storm. And, I mean, first of all, Brawl...
Yeah, Storm is really the deck you don't want to play with Valakut. That matchup, yeah, is miserable.
Yeah, so first of all, Brawl, like, what a... Like, I don't know why they needed Goblin Electromancer Plus, and we kind of talked about that a few weeks ago, but now the deck got Opt 2, which brought it even closer to, like, what it always wanted to be. Like, what's going on, man?
Yeah, I mean, the deck is just, like, it's really consistent. So I see a few different lists. It looks like the one that we have on the screen should be the one that got first place in the Open by Paul Mueller. But they're so not everyone is playing a bunch of opts yet. Some people are still leaning a little more on various other cards. But just, like, the density of cantrips that this deck now has makes Thoughtseize style effects less good than they were. It's just surprisingly difficult to hate out. And then it looks like this list actually sort of juked people in that he elected not to play Blood Moon in his sideboard. But one of the secrets of not playing Blood Moon when everyone else is
that everybody's gonna do it anyway.
Is that they all sideboard. So, like, okay, so you want your Valakut matchup to be really good, play a deck that they struggle with, and then have them board in a bunch of Nature's Claims with no targets against you.
Right.
Right, like, I mean, now you don't even have to draw Blood Moon, they just are playing a bad matchup with a bunch of cards that don't do anything in their deck too. Right, like, I think this deck is just really solid. I think having the extra Brawls and Goblin Electromancers is really powerful, but I've died a bunch of times with none of those in play, and adding Opt into the deck probably just makes that happen even more. Out of the board, the pieces of the puzzle are really sweet when your opponent is, like, trying to Thoughtseize and kind of just one-for-one you out of the game. Piece of the puzzle will refuel you as well as putting extra stuff in your graveyard. Empty the Warrens is a whole nother line of, you know, whole nother thing you have to beat. This deck is just really good.
What do you think about no fetch lands?
So that is a little bit unusual. I don't think that is necessarily standard, but I kind of like it with Opt specifically.
I also was thinking that with Opt plus Serum Visions, well, maybe not with Serum Visions. This is kind of a hard thing. You do make your Serum Visions worse.
Kind of, but Serum Visions isn't Ponder. I don't think you actually make your Serum... Like, you make your Serum Visions very, very marginally worse, but because you can put the second... The only time it's going to come up is when there's a card that you maybe want but aren't sure,
I guess,
and you
want
to be able to maybe shuffle it away.
It actually just doesn't matter with Scrying, right? Because you can just bottom...
You can bottom any of the two.
Yeah, well, you actually just don't need fetch lands at this point.
So, you don't need them, but this is sort of like the ad nauseum thing, right? Like... The card, they don't play fetch lands partially. I mean, it has some to do with, you know, going negative. Like, you can't pay life when you're negative. But even if you could, I don't think ad nauseum would play fetch lands, because the things that you're putting on the bottom with Serum Visions and Sleight of Hand, you don't want to redraw. So a lot of the time with Opt, there are very specific, when there are very, very specific cards you're looking for, you actually don't want to reshuffle your library prior to having a Gifts Ungiven. And I think that that is actually the rationale in this deck. Which is pretty interesting. I hadn't actually noticed that. And it's possible that more than zero is the correct number. But I think that's a really cool idea from Paul.
Let's go on to our next deck, which is Tron. This is green, black, and then one mono green deck. But the deck we're going to have on our screen is the mono green deck. And the reason why I wanted to talk about this kind of just shows the power, in my opinion, of things like Dismember and allowing you to do... This to me, is like pretty sweet. So
yeah, this deck is like the next level of awful. Well, awesome nonsense.
This is everything that Eldrazi Tron was ever supposed to be.
Yeah, this is the broken version of Eldrazi Tron because we managed to not cut Ancient Stirrings from it.
Who is Vandroll?
I'm pretty sure it's Frank Vanderwall, who is a guy I've talked to a number of times. He plays some PTs, but I don't think... I'm not sure if he's a pro level or not, but
I think he literally broke
good.
It.
Yeah, I think this deck is really cool.
Like,
So for those of you who can't see the list, so he's playing... So, like, he's not playing Eldrazi Tron, and he's not playing green-red or green-black or green-white Tron. He's playing green colorless Tron. So his mana base is 4 Eldrazi Temple, 3 Forest, a Ghost Quarter, a Sanctum, and then Tron lands. And then his spells are Ancient Stirrings, 2 Sylvan Scryings, 2 Dismember, then 6 Chromatic Effects, 4 Expedition Maps, and 3 Relics. So he's playing, like, basically just Worldbreaker, 2 Scryings and Ancient Stirrings as his spells, and then he's able to fit in some Thoughtknot Seers and a bunch of Walking Ballistas. So he's sort of, it's like Tron and Eldrazi Tron had a baby.
It is everything you want to do out of Eldrazi Tron, like, right? Like the Worldbreakers, the Thoughtknot Seers, the Walking Ballistas, and it's like this actually.
But you get to play Ancient Stirrings. Yeah, Ancient Stirrings is just insane. Like, you can actually support the one of Ulamog in this deck. Because you're way better at actually getting Tron, you can support the 4 of Karn,
right?
And the
you
Ukins
can
and stuff.
Like, you're all of a sudden. I do think that I wish that I could, like, I might cut a relic personally for the second Ulamog, but
or
outside
for another
of
star or another sphere,
oh,
I
yeah,
can imagine either
yeah.
of those.
But like being but, able to find more Ulamog, but this yeah. deck looks actually broken.
This deck is cool. It's really threading the needle. I've tried to do something like this before, and I couldn't quite get the balance right. For, like, colored spells versus sources. But this is really cool. And one of the things that I think is actually really neat about this is that Chalice of the Void is kind of a card where I feel like it sort of inceptions itself sometimes. Like, it's so good that it can't actually be that good because it's so good that you actually can't play things that it just straight up beats. So... Like, I think Chalice of the Void has almost single-handedly knocked Grixis Death Shadow out of the top few decks because it's so oppressive.
I want to talk about this deck in a microcosm really quick. So
right,
we have
I think that not playing Chalice because other people are playing Chalice is actually better, not worse, which is really cool.
So you're exactly getting to where I want to talk about. So we have people just trying to destroy Volokut, which is going to be one of this deck's worst matchups, right? Like, they are going hard in the paint to try and beat the Volokut decks. And then you have people on the other side that are, like, trying to crush Death Shadow, right? And because you have this void where, like, these two decks are being attacked in kind of very different ways, you have this huge gap in the metagame where this deck comes in and it's like, I don't know, like... none of the decks that are my bad matchups are going to come up because everybody's beating them. And then I don't have to play I don't have to play Safety Dallas because those decks don't exist against me if I hit this right on the spot. And honestly, it kind of looks like that happened.
Yeah, I think, like, you just get to play a really good mix. Like, one of the things I like about this deck is you can, like, kind of, like, with his sideboard, you can go up or down a little bit.
Right.
And it's just, it's really, I don't know that this it's list elegant. Is perfect, but it's, the idea is super elegant. Yeah, looks sweet.
It's the most elegant a Tron deck has ever been, in my opinion.
I mean, you get to play main deck Thought Knot Seers, and they, like, might actually be good.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's kind of the dream.
The dream, as they would say. Yeah, I really, really like what this... I mean, they took first for a reason, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, they 6-0'd Swiss and then took first. I believe they... Well, I'm not... Actually, I guess I should
make they did, 100% didn't they?
That they actually won. I believe so.
I'm pretty sure they did.
I can check really quickly.
Oh, I can't see that.
Yeah, I will...
Anyway, either way, they 6-0'd Swiss... I just think that it's an elegant solution to a problem that you and I have complained about a lot, right? Like, we haven't loved Tron.
Yeah, specifically he actually did. Tron. He won the top eight as well.
Yeah, he just didn't lose a match. And yeah. I think that he... When I say he broke it, like,
he only lost one game in the top eight.
Yeah. So. I think he did it. So this is a deck you might want to keep your eye on. Let's talk about our number one deck. This is going to surprise people, I think, because it is the first week in very, very long time where Death Shadow is not in the top five. In fact, we have Affinity coming in at number one. And I want to talk about why. I think for a similar reason to Tron coming up in the rankings, the fall of Volokut down to the number 3/4 spot really opens the doors for Affinity.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think Affinity is also just like, anytime people start getting excited about like trying to beat other decks, Affinity is just like actually just secretly the best deck by a lot.
Yeah,
it's just actually the most broken deck by like an almost immeasurable amount. So anytime people aren't specifically, like, spending a ton of resources trying to beat you, you mostly just crush everything.
I think that too often people forget that the actual most broken card in Modern is Mox Opal. And when they forget...
By so much. It's not even kind of close.
No, it's the most broken card. I mean, I don't even know what to say. Mox Opal is the most broken card in Modern by a significant margin. And nobody outside of the pros ever talks about it ever getting banned. Because they don't understand that it's the most broken card in Modern.
The flip side is that, like, I think a lot of the time if you're playing, like, weekly Modern, Affinity just isn't that dominant because it's the kind of deck where if you're just willing to, like, pay the sideboard tax, almost anything can beat it. But, man, you really have to be willing to pay the sideboard tax. And when you stop paying the sideboard tax, it just, you know, they get to play the four of Mox. You have to play real Magic and... It's just not games. The other sweet thing about Affinity in general is that your sideboard can basically include anything. Just actually anything. Like anything that costs 3 mana or less that you think is sweet, you can just put in your sideboard. I mean, there like some of these lists are playing a huge variety of things, but there's like a guy playing a Stain the Mind in his sideboard. I see a guy with a Thalia in his sideboard. An Eidolon of Rhetoric. Like, you can just, like... Because of Mox Opal and Springleaf Drum, you can just, like, your sideboard cards can just be literally anything you feel like. Oh, and Spire of Industry. Yeah, right? I mean, but because you have a bunch of rainbow lands and then you have rainbow ramp spells, like, anything 3 or less is fair game. So there's always, you know, you always think, okay, I have a good Affinity matchup unless they're playing this. And I've never seen anyone play it, but they definitely could be. Right? They're just like, who knows what your Affinity opponent is running in their sideboard? Maybe they're a psychopath.
I mean, so old school PTQs. I'm playing Rug Scapeshift, and I'm in Boise, Idaho. And my opponent, after sideboard of Affinity, it's game 3, and I get Thought Seized, Spell Pierced, and Ensoul Artifact. like in the same game.
Yeah, you're lucky you didn't get Blood Moon too.
I did get Blood Moon.
Sure.
And I was like, what just happened? Like, I think it might be one of the only times I've ever lost to Affinity with Scapeshift. And the thing is like, Affinity's power is like, if they want to beat you, they probably can.
So what's cool in that sense is like,
it's true in reverse too. But the problem is like, if I don't draw my sideboard cards, they have this very linear game plan plus their sideboard cards.
Right, exactly. That like they have two good hands, right? They have like the kill you on turn four, sometimes even turn three, like just like broken aggro start. But they also can sometimes just like cheese hate card you out of a game. Which
and it's so weird too, because like it feels like their hate cards that they bring in don't ever actually matter to their original game plan, right? Because like they only need like two signal pests and something else to actually kill you.
Yes. And that's like, the secret, right? That, like, you talk about decks mulliganing for Blood Moon or whatever. Affinity can't mulligan for it. But, man, if they have, like, double Memnite Signal Pest Blood Moon on turn two, you're dead. Yeah. Like, you're not beating that. It's just something that happened to you, right?
Well, Michael, I'm very proud of this power rankings because I think we went pretty deep. I hope that all the modern lovers got a lot out of it. But what would you play in modern right now and why?
Me 1 second. I think, well, okay, I have to try that Tron Eldrazi deck. I'm not going to call it Eldrazi Tron because it's not. It's like the reverse. So it's everything like, that I hate about Eldrazi Tron, I like
it's
about
not.
Deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is like a Thought Not Seer deck that plays other good Magic cards. And that seems great.
Yeah, I'm the same. I want to try this deck. I think it's legitimately broken. Like, I actually, like, thinking about the decks that I like to play, right? So, like, I like to play Scapeshift, I like to play Jund, I like to play Affinity. I think that I could build this deck to easily beat any of those.
Yeah,
and
it just
and that's
sweet.
A problem.
It seems, like, really powerful. Like, it's really close to doing some things that Tron isn't supposed to be able to do.
Right. Yeah, I would start there, and then if I didn't think that I could do that, I actually would play Jund right now. I think that if I think that Tron deck is not well positioned right, then I think that Jund fills that slot, and with Scapeshift and Tron out of the format, I think that I can build my Jund sideboard to beat things like Storm, beat things like Affinity, beat things like Death Shadow, and really take advantage of what's going on right now. And that's kind of my opinion right now.
Alternatively, I'm always interested in Affinity.
I am not the best Affinity player,
but I love it. It's really fascinating.
I try and play that deck every single week, like one night in bed or one night after work. Because I think that having that skill set in Modern is really important because like there are going to be weeks where it's correct. So just practicing with deck just a little bit is worth it.
It's really fun, too. It's like a really fun deck. Like, play Affinity a little and you'll realize how broken Mox Opal is because you see that card as one of the cards in your hand and you're just like, oh, yeah. It really, like, it's a really stupid Magic card.
Yep. Let's go on to our training ground. So every week on the show, we want to talk about something that's going to make you better at Magic or life in general. And I believe that this week is actually one that will make you better at both. I think that this is one that's so easy to apply in your real life that if you do, you will improve at your job, you will improve in your relationships. Like, this is one that I really appreciate. It's coming back from a misplay. We've all misplayed at our jobs, we've all misplayed in our relationships, and we all know we've misplayed in Magic. So I kind of want to talk about that, and I want to start by talking about my PPTQ Top 8 this week. So last week, I top aided a PPTQ and I had legitimately the best draft deck I've had in this format. It was not particularly close. It might be the best draft deck in the history of this format. And I lost in top four and I was really frustrated. I felt like I played really well. I feel like I made a mathematical correct decision on a mulligan that ended up losing me. And I was kind of sad. And then I went to another PPTQ this weekend. I made it all the way through the Swiss. and I hadn't lost a match, and I drafted a really good black-white deck, and in top eight, despite everything that I thought I knew about the format, contract killing is not an instant. And I got 0 for 5 from a bad attack thinking that it was. And it was probably one of the worst misplays I've made in Magic. Probably ever. It might actually be the worst play I've ever made in Magic. And I lost that game, obviously. And I sat back and I was shuffling my deck and I was like, that was one of the worst plays I've ever made. And I was up a game, luckily. But when I made the play, and my opponent literally looks at me and says, just let it fester. Just let it fester. Just think about that some more. And I was like, no, we're good.
Oh, that's great. That's a good line. I got to keep that one in my back pocket.
What? Let it fester?
Just let it fester.
So I shuffle up and, you know, I just kind of move on. And I think that too often we don't do this. And I want to talk about the kinds of things that this happens with to start with. So, Michael, what is a misplay to you?
It's any time that, like, the information that you had available. So any time you make a bad play made based on the information available to you. So something can end badly but still be correct. That doesn't really bother me very much. You know, like, you just get lucky or unlucky or whatever. That's just something that happens. It's right. Not a big deal. But when you have information, like, either on your opponent's deck or their hand, or you should have been able to reason through and find a better line, and you failed to do so, that is a misplay.
Yeah, and I think that, for me, it that encompasses so much, is that I knew X and Y, and I still chose Q for some reason. And I don't know why I chose Q, other than I kind of was ignoring Z, thinking it didn't matter when in reality it did. And I don't know how to quantify that outside of Magic sometimes. So, you know, when you think about making mistakes at work, or maybe making mistakes in your relationship, or, you know, making a poor decision when it comes to using your credit card. I think that so often we get caught up and we get a linear mind. And I think that what we don't realize is that this can also happen in Magic, right? We just focus so much on Y that we ignore X and Z. We just completely ignore them. We get in this one-track mind, and we say, X is all that matters. I need X to work. And then it turns out horribly. And this doesn't just happen in Magic. And I think that it happens so much outside of Magic that sometimes we don't even notice that we're doing it in Magic.
Yeah, I think this happens a lot where your misplay isn't necessarily like a specific mistake, but maybe deciding something was important that wasn't, or like just making the game about an axis you can't win on.
Exactly. This happens in control mirrors. So often people will be like, yeah, I fought over this thing that didn't matter and I don't know why I did it. And that is a microcosm of the bigger problem.
Right. Just like losing. And I think a lot of the time that comes down to sort of, it's sometimes hard to figure it out. You almost need to know sometimes from prior experience sort of what happens when you fight over these spells. So sometimes, like, in playtesting games, I think it's valuable to try to, like, play them from a different perspective almost, like with a different game-related focus, and see how that changes things. But I think that those are really easy mistakes to make, and sometimes they're hard to see as mistakes.
How hard is this for you, Michael? Like, what or even what makes this hard?
Well, I think that when it comes to making mistakes, just like, they're just going to happen sometimes. I don't think it's really realistic to expect yourself to play perfectly, be it even from even from the perspectives where you can do a lot of your work ahead of time, like understanding how you're supposed to be playing matchups, you know, a big part of Magic is sort of changing things dynamically as they come up. And you're going to sometimes make bad plays or misevaluate a board state or misread a card or miscast a card, like, you know, not use something that's most efficient. Like, it's just going to happen. And what makes it hard is that you have to try to improve without being unrealistic about the standards you're imposing on yourself.
Oh, man, you got into so much of something that I've struggled with so much, which is, and maybe I think that you get to the point where everyone struggles with this. I think that you and I have had conversations where you also have struggled with this, where you're like, what could I have done? What could I have done? And you just focus so much on every little thing, and so much of it you did completely correct. But you start questioning your correct decisions just to try and find something wrong.
Yeah, I think that can happen. But even when you can find something that you very clearly did wrong, I think that, like, kind of trying to find the line between holding yourself accountable for mistakes and having unreasonable expectations can be tricky, in that, like, we want to improve and we don't want to keep making the same mistakes. But at the same time, I think being negative about the things you've done and, like, really hard on yourself when maybe it was a really challenging decision, and, like, a lot of the mistakes you make are not as silly as thinking contract killing is an instant, right? I've lost games where, like, it was a really tough, you know, you make a really tough call and it ends up burning you, and maybe you could have been able to figure out that the other play was, like, a slightly better percentage play. But it's not like the play you made was horrible or anything. And I think just, like, outside of, hey, I made a mistake there, I maybe could have won that game and I played it perfectly, I don't know that you get a lot out of, like, being really hard on yourself in those situations. So I think finding the balance between trying to learn and just treating yourself poorly is a challenging one.
When I think about Magic sometimes, I think about it in the way that I think about, like, an algebra problem or a multi-step equation, right? Which is breaking down it into those steps and those parts of the problem that you need to solve the entire equation or to solve that entire board state. Find out what steps are in front of you and then go from there. Is this something that you ever think about, Michael?
Yeah, I like that comparison in some senses, especially that, like, when you make a mistake, oftentimes everything that will follow from there is inherently wrong. Like, you'll make a mistake in an evaluation early, and much like if you're doing, some kind of math equation. Statistics, right? I mean, if you're having to do, like, something that has steps, once you make the mistake, it's very difficult to win from that point because you're working with incorrect information, right? So kind of like if you misevaluate what a game is about, like, you can play really well technically, but if you're not fighting over the correct spells, like, in the blue-red control mirror last season, in, like, game ones, wasn't the idea that, like, you actually didn't fight over draw spells ever, because the secret was that you had so much removal that neither player could ever actually just attack. The secret was actually to never cast draw spells if your opponent had more cards in their library than you.
Fun fact, I won a PPTQ with Jeskai control because of this exact rule you're talking about.
Right, and, like, so you could have played the game really well from a technical aspect, like all your sequencing and mana decisions and, like, baiting spells out, like, your technical play could have been brilliant, but if you're not approaching a matchup correctly, it maybe doesn't even matter.
Right.
And I think that, like, trying to figure out sort of where your mistakes are coming from and figuring out how to improve on those going forward is, like, a really, really tough thing to do, tough thing to get better at sometimes.
So what we're talking about here is coming back from a mistake. And we did an episode a while back, literally called Don't Compound Mistakes. And it is one that I have carried with me for a long time. And I think that Limited Resources actually did an episode on this a few weeks back, talking about once you've done something wrong, you're at zero again. Every time you make a decision, you need to go back to zero and not make mistakes to cover up your mistake or to hide the fact that you were stupid. maybe you weren't stupid.
Like, I think Paulo wrote an article about that too, where it's like,
yeah, so many.
It's way better to make one mistake publicly than two mistakes privately.
Oh, that is a perfect example.
Right, which is it's basically don't play badly to hide that you did something dumb earlier. Just whatever, it happens. No shame. Just play.
Yeah, you have to start from zero again, especially once you know you've made the mistake, right? Like, I knew that that contract killing was not an instant the second my opponent was like, that doesn't work. So I needed to put that contract killing back in my hand and evaluate what was happening from there. That's
right,
it.
Right.
That's
now it's just a new situation.
Right. Exactly.
I watched Danny play a game at a Grand Prix where his opponent tried to cast Battle at the Bridge as an instant in a
We've told this story so many times.
And then was so like ashamed of his mistake that he just didn't cast it at all and then died the next turn because he didn't cast it.
It was
like he still probably would have won the game if he would have just cast it as a sorcery.
He would have won the game. It was one of the most insane plays I've ever watched. Because Michael and I are standing there and he goes into his combat stat. Like he draws the Battle at the Bridge. He looks at it and Michael and I are like, look at each other like, oh, he just won the game. Then he says, enter combat. And then Michael and I both turn our heads completely around like, what is happening? And then I knew what was happening and Michael knew what was happening. He tried to cast it and it's like that's
but he's still like so like despite it being sort of you know yeah. like oh like an oh crap that was shameful yes. moment
and then
if he just like sucked it up and cast it post combat he probably right. still wins.
He goes to a second main, looks at the Battle of the Bridge that he has the mana for in his hand, and Danny activated the creature that was the problem anyway,
right? Because Danny had some terrible deck so, with like seven vehicles or whatever. Yeah,
and the guy's just like, well, I made a mistake, go ahead. And then he's like, okay, kill you?
Untap, kill you? Yeah, it was very bizarre.
But
that broke down into one of those where it was just like, he got so flustered from the initial mistake that he stopped just playing Magic.
Right.
Where and like so sometimes your mistake, like, it sounds like you're contract killing, right? I mean, if you actually get 5-for-1 because you tried to play as a sorcery as an instant, like, maybe you can't win this game anymore. And that's an okay realization to come to. But you have to at least think about it, right? Like this guy almost certainly still could have won this game.
Yes. I mean, he would have won. He literally would have won.
It, like, would have been very ahead, like, the next turn.
And I think that what we need to realize is that we are human. And being human means making mistakes. So we need to understand the fact that we did make a mistake and start from zero again and go from there. If you get to the end of the equation and the answer is obviously wrong, find out where you made the mistake. Go back, figure it out, and start again.
Yeah, I like that. And what I would tie into being human is just, like, take it easy on yourself. Like, I have made plenty of mistakes that made me feel really dumb, but, like, pouting about it or being like, oh, I'm so bad, I can't believe I didn't. Like, it's not helpful to be negative towards yourself. Like, you're going to mess up. It happens. But
yeah, I kind of wish instead of a bad beat culture, we had an improvement culture in Magic. Like, I understand the bad beat stories are exciting, but like, what if the culture instead was, dude, do you know what I did this round? This is what I did. Isn't that funny? Here's what I should have done. Like, I feel like I want that culture and to be a part of that culture. Like, turn it into, I made this mistake, haha me, and then go forward and move forward.
Yeah, all you can really do is just like, you mess up and you say, okay, I messed up. That's the thing that happens to me sometimes. And then, you know, how do I fix it for next time?
What if it's a big mistake? How do you cope with those big mistakes in Magic, Michael?
I mean, same way, basically. I don't know. I mean, there's like, ultimately, you're going to make mistakes, and sometimes they're going to be at really crappy times, and you're going to say, oh man, I wish I hadn't, you know, I wish I could have made this mistake at my FNM instead of a, you know, winning in for a Pro Tour invite or whatever. But like, ultimately, the good news is if you had a Pro Tour win in, you'll probably have another because you're probably pretty good. And if you, you know, made it in the finals of your FNM, well, you're probably good enough to get back to the finals of your FNM. Like, you know, I think that ultimately, like, pretending like any of these chances once in a lifetime is probably not true. And
yeah, I had a patron, his name is Andrew, ask me, he's like, hey man, I'm super nervous about this RPTQ. It's the first RPTQ he's qualified for. He's like, what do I do differently? How do I prepare differently? What do I do? Like, what's the difference in the match? And I just told him, I said, Andrew, there's no difference in the match. And that's how you gain the edge, is that at the end of the day, you are still playing Magic. You're playing the same game you play to qualify for this tournament.
Exactly. And like, if it goes well, cool. And if not, well, you already won a PPTQ, so it's pretty strong evidence you can do it again, right? Like, it gets easier with time. And, you know, I just think in general, like, putting a bunch of, unless you're the kind of person who really likes having a bunch of pressure on yourself, the worst thing you can do is beat yourself up about it, because you'll likely have another chance. You know, it's the trick is just to learn from it and do better next time and say, you know, I wish I would have played better, but it is what it is.
Yeah, so that's going to be it for this week from the Training Grounds. Don't forget, you can check us out at patreon.com/CCMTG to become a patron of this show. And limited time only, a podcast about getting better at limited Magic. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Halland. You can join the Constructive Critics group if you're a patron of $5 or more. You can join the Constructive Criticism family or the Discord channel. We had a good discussion in the Discord channel today. I'd like to see more of those. So check that out on the bios page at ConstructiveCriticism.com. You can find the podcast every week at ConstructiveCriticism.com, MTGcast.com, on YouTube, and here on Twitch.tv/CCMPG. Michael, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook. My name is Michael Hinderacher. You feel free to send me a message or whatever. I'm in the Facebook group, so if you tag me in there, I'll probably see it, and I'll do my best to respond. You can also tweet at me. My Twitter is at MagicMikeMTG. I do not use it especially often, but, you know, that is a thing that could change.
You can join the clan by messaging me at Spencer13Dev on MTGO. And you can join the conversation by tweeting with hashtag would that be good. Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, we will read it. You love that so much.
I do. It's so great.
let's start from, I think, wow, we have a lot in the last 24 hours. Let's start from...
okay, this, I know it was after the picture of the pineapple.
It definitely was.
It was the one immediately after. No, no, no.
Yeah, it was.
It was October 12th is the one.
Cool. One time I drew 17 cards in one turn against DJ Cathro, hashtag of the good, hashtag MDG. It was good.
How do you draw 17 cards? Sounds like you're cheating.
A card for the turn, and then I had multiple anointed processions in play, and Scarab got back a
Champion of Wits?
Champion of Wits. There we go.
Oh. That's like way less exciting than I was hoping.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's like not even that surprising. That's like by far the easiest way to draw 17 cards. Like of the like,
somebody clip that. I just want a clip of Michael saying that's just the easiest way to draw 17 cards. That's by far
like,
the easiest.
I'm ashamed that I couldn't come up with that, is basically what I'm saying.
I feel like you could just Sphinx's Rev for 17 or you need
so many lands for that to happen. You just need double anointed procession here, right?
Okay.
Right? I mean, but that's like a thing that's got to happen fairly often. Like,
all
right. People probably just like actually draw 16 with that. You double anointed procession and champion awaits. There you go.
Boom. Easy peasy lemon squeezy. Ryan says at CCMTG, this is the deck I was referring to. Deck has been really good for me and obviously for Conley. Conley went 42-13 in comp leagues with his shock puppet, as he's calling it now. I've lost to so many freaking...
I watched him play this in a PTQ online for a little bit on Saturday, maybe, or Sunday, whatever day it was.
Yeah, he had a
for Friday.
He was pretty close to top eighting from what.
Yeah,
I
he ended up X 2, but it's like pretty cool. Like, you do some nutty things. I saw him minus his Tezzeret on his own Marionette Master to make it an 8-2, and then pop 4 treasures and 32 his opponent, which was kind of sick.
Yeah, I have died to many, many different versions of this deck.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how good this exact deck is, but it's really cool. It's really cool.
Yeah, it is. It is cool. Jason did, in fact, get a video of his daughter singing our theme song, which was one of the cutest things I've ever seen. And I really appreciated that. And I should show it to my wife because I... Very cute daughter. Man, our fans are cool, dude. I don't know what to say. Like, he's listening to that so much in this car that his daughter's singing it. That's so cool. So thank you so much for all your support, Jason. It really means the world to us. Andrew says...
That's a very sweet video.
Yeah. Andrew says, been on a tear with Eldrazi Tron at the LGS testing, something close to 70% win rate, feel confident for the RPDQ. I'm glad you feel confident now, man. Like, it really... It's good.
It's what I would say, though, too, is, like, no matter how it goes, good or bad, like, just play the best Magic you can, and then if you do well, great, and if you don't, let it go and get back there. That's all you can do.
Yep. Sword of Light and Shadow, Google Translate. Hashtag, would that be good? No light with the sword, 3 mana, Archaeology Devices, see up to white, black, +2/+2. A player can be naturally put to rest in the text and has had a hard time with his 3-way experience. Where 2 to equip? Or just 2. I don't know a lot about this life, but it seems like a difficult one.
Seems great. I want Magic cards with this as the language.
I don't know what this card does.
That's why it's funny. I mean, it's just sort of Light and Shadow run through Google Translate in both directions, right?
Yeah. Baby Stairlift, hashtag with the beginning. This is in response to the video of my son trying to... he legitimately, for like an hour and a half today, tried to figure out how to get up a stair. Like, he was in the basement, and he was trying to figure out how to go up the stairs, and he could not do it. But man, was he tired afterwards. And I will take that every time over a stairlift for him.
That he sleeps well.
Well, he was extremely entertained and then slept.
Boom. That is a combo.
At Spencer13H, at Magic Mike, you have to ban one of these 3 cards in Modern: Eldrazi Temple, Gifts, or Urza Power Plant. Hashtag would be good. I would ban Gift so fast. Like, so fast.
Me too. I hate Storm.
Yeah, I would ban that card so fast. If you said that card was banned tomorrow, I would actually be happy. I think that it's unfun. And it should not be in Modern. I mean, that's not true. I don't care if it's in Modern, but it's the one I would ban, and it's not close.
I mean, my reasoning is, I don't have, like, a good reason. I just don't like that deck.
Yeah. Messed up on
which
MTGO.
Which is admittedly a stupid reason. But if I had to choose one, I know which one I'd choose.
Messed up on MTGO and had a 75-card main deck. Still ended up going 4-1 without losing a single game one. Hashtag, would that be good?
I mean, it's clearly not good, but it sounds like it was happening. And sometimes Magic is about dealing with what's happening, not what you intended.
I like that he completed the league. That makes my day.
I mean, sometimes, I mean, I don't know. I accidentally played a blue-red Delver list in Legacy the other day without Lightning Bolts and still played the league.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I was like, why do I have so much space? And then I looked at the list after, like, you know, in a sideboard, and was like, oh.
Dude, I, like, went, like, 10-0 with a scapeshift deck. Like,
with no scapeshifts.
It's just crushing people. And then somebody was like, how do you have room for all this? And I was like, I don't know. And then I looked, and I'm like, oh, there's no scapeshifts in this deck.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just want to make it a little trickier.
Pre-show, I feel that. Pre-show on at CCMDG. We're talking about unbanning Jace, hashtag with a begid. Yeah, it would be good. What about Jace and Stoneforge? Hashtag with a be good. Hashtag yes, please.
No,
I don't want
Stoneforge. Just isn't fun. It's not.
Yeah,
I actually think
the Death and Taxes deck would actually be too good in Modern if you unban Stoneforge Mystic. Where I think
that would be a weird world. Jeez.
Yeah, I don't think that unbanning Jace would be a problem. And the reason is because I think that the decks that were built at the beginning of Modern all had Jace in mind because they started from the, like, they're all the creatures that were good against, like, to start with, it was all creatures that were good against Jace when Jace was in Standard. So because of that, I just don't think he would be a problem because, like, the format naturally started, before that. I don't know. Like, everything's like...
I really don't think Jace would be that problematic. Maybe I'm wrong. It's possible.
I don't think you're wrong. I think we agree. We're in argumentative agreement during the pre-show.
Perfect.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening this week. We really appreciate it. We'll see you guys all next week, and you guys have a wonderful day.
Thanks for listening. Sorry, I just had that like pause where I wasn't really sure that you were 100% done talking, and then I just like, yeah.
Magic.